From national news in D.C.
to behind-the-scenes coverage of the Nebraska Capitol,
this is your Capitol Connection.
And now, bringing the Capitol to you,
here's your host, Nate Graz.
And welcome to Capitol Connection. We are broadcasting today from the Nebraska Family Alliance Studio in Lincoln, where we are working every day to advance family, freedom, and life, and to keep you informed on the biggest news in government, policy, and culture from a biblical perspective. On today's show, we're talking all things legislature because the Nebraska legislature is set to begin this week on January 8th. We'll give you a special preview of what you need to know about this year's session, what you can expect, why it matters, and how people of faith can play a key role in impacting the laws that shape our state. Plus, we'll take a look back at the biggest and most important trends of the past decade, both good and bad, to see where our country is headed and what we need to focus on. But first, coming off of Christmas, I have to start by talking about this story that was reported on by the Omaha World Herald about how Governor Pete Ricketts came under fire from Omaha Democrat candidate for Congress Kara Eastman and Omaha State Senator Megan Hunt for having the audacity to issue a Christmas proclamation recognizing December 25th as Christmas. Stunningly, but perhaps not all that surprisingly, local Democrat politicians were not happy with Governor Ricketts for issuing a proclamation declaring Christmas as Christmas in Nebraska and recognizing the reason that we pause to celebrate Christmas on December 25th and the significance of that day and what it means to people of faith. And the article goes like this. Ricketts tweeted out the proclamation on Wednesday, along with the message, Merry Christmas, Nebraska. Critics started weighing in soon after. Among them was Kara Eastman, a Democrat contender for the Omaha area congressional seat. While noting that she was raised Catholic and celebrates Christmas, she pointed to issues about the separation of church and state and about alienating Nebraskans who are not Christian. She said on Twitter, quote, I was raised Catholic and celebrate Christmas. I wish Governor Ricketts would read the comments. Issues like separation of church and state, alienating Nebraskans of other faiths, imposing his own views on others. She was not alone. State Senator Megan Hunt of Omaha called the proclamation, quote, way out of bounds. She said the First Amendment ensures faith is not corrupted by government, pivotal to freedom of religion. The proclamation from the governor started off, quote, whereas Christmas is a time for us to celebrate and give thanks for God's gift of Jesus Christ, and ended with the governor urging all citizens to reflect upon the special meaning and significance of the holiday as we spend time with family and friends. It included mention of prayers for the safe return of service members who could not be with loved ones during the holiday season. And so a proclamation, by the way, is just that. It's a proclamation. It's not a law. It has no force of law. It doesn't require anyone to do anything. It's mostly symbolic and ceremonial. Typically in recognition of special events or occasions, or in this case, just recognizing December 25th as Christmas and the fact that hundreds of thousands of Nebraskans would be celebrating Christmas on December 25th. So for the governor to be criticized for issuing a proclamation recognizing December 25th as Christmas, and asking for prayers for service members, it's just ridiculous. It's ludicrous. It obviously does not violate the First Amendment. The governor can issue any sort of proclamation that he wants. Again, it's not a law. It's not violating anything. And Taylor Gage, the governor's spokesman, defended the proclamation, saying that the governor has issued these same or similar proclamations every year and has also issued proclamations for other faiths, saying, quote, it's a shame that Kara Eastman and Megan Hunt are continuing the war on Christmas. While Christmas is celebrated by people in many ways, a proclamation recognizing the original purpose of the holiday and encouraging Nebraskans to pray for our troops is entirely appropriate. And sure enough, when the Omaha World Herald reached out to the ACLU for comment, they actually defended the proclamation, saying that it does not raise legal issues about government and religion because it does not have the force of law, which of course is true. But they then added, quote, in the future, we hope the governor uses his platform to celebrate the diversity of all Nebraskans. And this is just pure nonsense. The governor issuing a proclamation recognizing the celebration of Christmas is something that should be expected and certainly not criticized. I mean, if you follow the logic here, what is he supposed to do? He can never issue a proclamation or make any statement unless that statement or celebration or holiday is universally recognized and celebrated by every single Nebraskan. What is he supposed to say? Merry Christmas and happy December 25th, regular day of the year, to everyone who's not recognizing Christmas? What holiday, if not Christmas, is celebrated by every single citizen? And certainly not everyone does celebrate Christmas, but that doesn't mean that the governor is now forbidden from recognizing December 25th as Christmas. It certainly isn't offensive, and it certainly doesn't violate the separation of church and state. And in fact, that's exactly what former Nebraska Attorney General Don Stenberg pointed out in an editorial that he wrote that was published in the World Herald in response to this story. And this is what he writes, quote, "Governor Pete Ricketts' proclamation recognizing that Christmas is the celebration of the birth of Jesus has stirred up two types of objections. First, it alleges that it violates the separation of church and state. Second, it is said to be offensive. The first objection is wrong as a matter of law. The words separation of church and state are nowhere to be found in our federal or state constitutions. The federal constitution provides in part, Congress shall make no law respecting an establishment of religion or prohibiting the free exercise thereof or abridging the freedom of speech. This provision was written to protect the religious beliefs and practices of individual Americans from government interference. Under it, an individual may not be compelled by law to participate in a religion, nor can the government penalize a religious belief it finds objectionable. This provision of the federal constitution protects the right of the governor to publicly express his religious views, just as it protects the right for all other Americans. The other objection is that the governor should not express his religious views because those views are offensive. Around our nation, college professors have been fired and students expelled from colleges because they expressed opinions that offended the college administrators or other students. What does it really mean when someone says, you can't say that because it offends me? It means I am intolerant of opinions that are different from mine, and I want the government to punish you if you say it. The First Amendment provision prohibiting the government from abridging the freedom of speech was written for the very purpose of preventing government from punishing speech that some people might find offensive. So feel free to use your freedom of speech to criticize the governor, but understand the governor has every right to express his religious views, whether you agree with them or not." That is exactly right, and I, for one, am glad and thankful that we have a governor who understands the First Amendment, who respects and upholds the principles of religious freedom, and chooses to celebrate Christmas. And so from Nebraska Family Alliance, thank you, Governor Pete Ricketts. It's safe to say we're behind you on this, and we will always stand up for religious freedom. Now, onto the main topic of the show today. You can expect to hear and see more of this type of ridiculous infighting because the state legislature is set to begin this week on Wednesday, January 8th. We're going to talk about what you need to know, give a special preview of the session, what you can expect, and importantly, how the church can make a difference. So, Nebraska state senators will convene at the state capitol on Wednesday, January 8th for day one of a 60 working day session, which is scheduled to conclude on April 23rd. There are 49 state senators, each representing approximately 39,000 Nebraskans. And of course, as a unicameral, Nebraska only has one house, and with only 49 state senators, is actually the smallest legislature in the entire country. 49 state senators for the entire legislature is not very many. It's very small by comparison to other states who have hundreds and sometimes hundreds on hundreds of representatives and senators. So that means that individual state senators have a huge amount of influence and power in the Nebraska legislature. This year's session will be year two of a two-year cycle. The legislature operates on two-year cycles, switching between a long 90-day session the first year and a second shorter 60-day session the second year, which is what we are in 2020. That also means that bills that were introduced the previous year that weren't dealt with or weren't either voted on in favor or defeated will carry over into this year's session. But senators still have the first 10 days of this year's session to introduce new legislation. So the first 10 days are very important, very busy. It's when all of the bills are introduced. Last year, there were over 700, I believe, a huge number, and we'll expect several hundred new bills to be introduced in those first 10 days. And after that happens, after those first 10 days and all the bills are introduced, every single one, each bill is assigned to a committee, which is comprised of 6 to 9 state senators, and then a committee hearing is scheduled for that legislation. Every bill is guaranteed a public hearing, which is another unique component to the Nebraska legislature. Every single bill gets a public hearing where the public can come weigh in and support or opposition to that bill and make their voice heard. Now, if the bill is advanced out of committee, the bill needs a simple majority of 25 votes to pass into law. But typically, it's becoming more common that a bill is filibustered, which means that it needs 33 votes to pass, which out of 49 senators is very difficult to accomplish. That's a high threshold to get 33 votes out of 49 senators to pass a bill. On top of that, every bill must go through 3 rounds of voting by the full legislature before being sent to the governor for his signature, signing it into law, or being vetoed. If a bill is vetoed by the governor, it gets sent back to the legislature where it must get 30 votes to override the governor's veto. Now, here is a big key. Each senator gets to designate one bill as their priority bill. What that means is that it has priority for being scheduled for debate and is moved to the top of the legislative agenda. This is important because, especially in a short session of only 60 days, senators are crunched for time. Like I mentioned, there is hundreds and hundreds of bills, and they have to go through 3 rounds of voting, which means that typically, only bills that get that priority designation or bills that have unanimous or near unanimous consent and don't really need to be discussed as thoroughly, those are the only bills that get debated and even scheduled. So which bills get prioritized by senators determines what gets debated and voted on. So those are the mechanics of the legislature. Those are the basic functions of how it works. But here's what you can expect to see in the 2020 session. Property taxes, and more property taxes. That is the number one issue for many state senators, and it will dominate much of this year's session and debate. That will be the number one issue, but it won't be the only issue. You can also expect to see a big push for school choice. This is a carryover bill from last year, LB 670, introduced by State Senator Lou Anne Linehan of Elkhorn. It was voted out of committee last year and debated by the full legislature, but not voted on, and it's likely to come up again. And that's a good thing because this is a really important bill. Nebraska is one of the last few states in the entire country that doesn't have school choice options. In fact, Nebraska is ranked 49th, almost dead last in the entire country when compared to other states' parental education choices. And it's all but guaranteed that this bill will be filibustered, but it shouldn't be. Here's why. Different kids have different needs. Different students do better in different learning environments. And parents should have more control of their child's education than the government. And all this legislation seeks to do is to create a tax credit scholarship. Scholarships are a critical means of helping low-income families get the best education for their children. LB 670 would create a tax credit for private donations to nonprofit scholarship-granting organizations, which help provide scholarships to eligible students to use at non-public schools. The bill does not divert any money away from public schools, none. Rather, it incentivizes private dollars to be turned into private donations for school scholarships for parents and families to use at the school of their choice. For many families, faith-based values are an essential part of their lives and want these values instilled in their children at school. This diversity should be celebrated by allowing greater school choice options for parents. Private scholarships help meet this need and provide parents and students with the educational outcomes they desire. And right now, it's difficult for low-income families to have their children's educational needs met, and it's critical that we create school choice in Nebraska to help give parents the freedom to control the education of their own children. And that's a big part of this. You know, this is, of course, about education, but really it's a poverty issue. This is specifically for low-income families who don't have the means that others might to send their child to the school of their choice. This is for families who don't have a choice. And this is all this bill's help is doing, is to create that choice for them. And if they have a great public school or they want their children in a public school, that's great. They can keep them there. But what about the families who don't want their child in a public school, or they're in a school district with a low-performing public school? This is just giving people options and more freedom and control over their own child's education. And that's a good thing. So that's a really important bill to watch out for in this year's session. Another issue of great importance that you can expect to see debated this year is the sanctity of life. Last year, the legislature passed LB 209, the Abortion Pill Reversal Information Act, and you can expect to see new pro-life legislation introduced this year to protect preborn human life. This is an issue of first importance for us at Nebraska Family Alliance, and we'll be working hard to ensure that the unborn have a voice at the state capitol this year and work to support and advance pro-life policies. Last year, there was also a record number of bills introduced that threatened religious freedom. And that, too, is something we'll be keeping a close eye on, and you can easily keep track of the most important legislation that NFA is tracking and working in support and opposition to at our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org. Click on our bill tracker page where you can see the bills we're monitoring, what they would do, how it would impact you and your family, what the status is, and how you can help make a difference. It's a great tool and a really easy way to keep track of all the most important bills as they are progressing throughout the legislative process. And another really easy way to stay informed is to sign up for our e-network so you get all of our updates and action alerts alerting you to when bills are coming up before a committee or the full legislature. And how you can contact your state senator will provide you with all of the information and talking points that you can use. It's really simple. But it's also crucial that elected officials and our state senators hear from their constituents when these issues are coming up before the legislature. And lastly, one more free resource you can take advantage of is called Adopt a Leader. Nebraska Family Alliance will send you a free prayer resource packet, which includes a magnet with a photo of your state senator to help remind you to pray daily for your elected leaders who need and covet our prayers. And to receive that, again, just go to our website, NebraskaFamilyAlliance.org, click on the prayer tab, and you'll get all of the information about how you can help adopt a leader in prayer. Those are some of the biggest things to look out for and resources that you can take advantage of to help stay up to date and informed on what's happening down at the state capitol, where elected officials are working and making decisions on your behalf that will affect you and your family and your church and your business. And at Nebraska Family Alliance, we are working to maintain a daily presence at the state capitol, to serve as watchmen on the wall for families across the state, and to be a voice for the voiceless, and to defend religious freedom. We do this because what happens at the Capitol doesn't stay there. The decisions that are made by our state legislature, our representatives, affect the lives of real people, and that includes the lives of unborn children. And as a faith-based organization, we often deal with the question of whether or not the church and Christians should get involved in politics. And that's a really important question, and the answer is yes. It is absolutely critical and a biblical mandate that people of faith influence government and policy. And our friends at the Colson Center for Christian Worldview have released a new short video from their project, What Would You Say?, explaining why. It's a great, concise answer to that question of should the church get involved in political issues. It's very well done and important for people to hear and understand. So here are three important points to keep in mind when considering if the church should get involved in political issues.
Politics can be dirty, but the church should be holy. So a lot of people believe that churches should avoid political issues. Sometimes the intention is to help the church avoid compromising situations. Other times, this is said in an attempt to keep the church out of the public square. But is it biblical? The next time you hear someone say that churches should avoid political issues, here are three things to remember. First, there's no such thing as a political issue. There are economic issues, environmental issues, criminal justice issues, educational issues, and transportation issues. But there are no political issues. Why? Because politics is not a category of issues. Politics is a process. The political process can be used to work through any issue as we attempt to order our lives together. What side of the road should we drive on? What's the definition of marriage? The fact that an issue is being debated in a political process should not determine whether Christians should care about it. Which leads to the second point. Second, if God cares about an issue, we should care about it too. The Bible doesn't speak to which side of the road we should drive on, but it does have a lot to say about marriage and the value of each life. For Christians, the critical question is not, is this political or not, but does God care? When He cares, we should care. That's what we signed up for. Besides, churches that claim to avoid political issues rarely do so consistently. Many avoid cultural hot potatoes like homosexuality or the definition of marriage, but speak loudly on issues like racial injustice and human trafficking, as they should. God cares about them all. But selective engagement suggests that our real concern is not about political involvement, but about offending cultural sensitivities. Which leads to the third point. Third, the choice to avoid political issues is itself a political decision. When churches selectively decide which biblical issues they will speak about based on expected reactions, they're doing the most political thing possible. They're telling people what they want to hear, not what they need to hear. Churches don't represent themselves. They represent Jesus. We shouldn't speak or engage because we're angry, and we should never be unkind. But avoiding conflict is not the example Jesus gave. Let's review. Next time someone tells you churches shouldn't get involved in political issues, remember, there's no such thing as a political issue. Politics is simply a process. Second, if God cares, we should care. That's what it means to be a Christian. And third, avoiding political issues is a political decision. Doing what is popular is political. Doing what is right is biblical.
So those are some really great points to remember, especially as our state legislature is set to begin. And certainly we can see the role that the church can play and the difference that people of faith can make in the political process. And we will need that influence and engagement from the church due to those issues that we talked about that we expect to see in this year's session. Now, as we close out the show, this week I came across a really great article from Focus on the Family talking about the top 10 trends of the last 10 years. As we head into 2020 and a new decade, it's a great time to reflect on the trends of the past decade, both good and bad, to see where our country is headed. So, as identified by Focus on the Family, the top five concerning trends from the past 10 years. Number one, the redefinition of marriage and gender. Number two, U.S. birth rates hit a 32-year low. Number three, suicide rates are increasing. Number four, the national debt is continuing to skyrocket. And number five, Americans continue to leave religion behind. But it's not all bad news. The top five positive trends from the past decade: number one, a decline in abortion rates. Number two, the rate of babies born out of wedlock is beginning to decline. Number three, the stock market is hitting record highs. Fourth, unemployment rate has fallen to a 50-year low. And number five, violent crime rates continue to fall. As with any decade, the news is a mix of both good and bad, as we see from that list. But Nebraska Family Alliance, we will be here through it all to defend life and liberty and to advance family, freedom, and life. And heading into 2020, let's be thankful for every good gift that we have been given and be ready to tackle whatever tough challenge that we may face over the next decade. That's all the time we have for this week. I'm your host, Nate Graz, Policy Director for the Nebraska Family Alliance. Hoping you'll join us again next week. Thanks for listening to your Capital Connection.